Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send us a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. When it comes to sweeteners, one growing concern is our consumption of sugar. While sugar can be derived from a myriad of sources, it has become an ingredient that is hard to avoid. On today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming Ms. Brooke Alpert, who co-authored the best-selling book, The Sugar Detox. We're going to discuss what you need to know about your sugar consumption, tips to avoid sugar, and how to lose weight, feel great, and look years younger with The Sugar Detox. So I would like to welcome to the show Ms. Brooke Alpert. Good afternoon, Brooke, and welcome to the show.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Brooke, can you please tell our audience about yourself and why you and Patricia decided to write The Sugar Detox?
Well, I'm a registered dietitian. I have a private practice in New York City called Be Nutritious. And Dr. Farris and I met years ago working for a cosmetics company. We were working on a cellulite program. And throughout our relationship over the last 6 years, we're constantly talking about how limited I am just doing foods. And she's always talking about how limited she is just talking skin. And together we really realized that we could do a great double team approach, and we like to refer to it as an inside-out, outside-in approach to making both of our patients feel better, including looking younger, have healthier skin, and the works. And it was really with all of this information we were gathering slowly about sugar, and I was changing the way my practice was, and Dr. Farris was changing her practice as well, really starting to focus on sugar, that we said, you know what, there's a book here. We need to write this. And 2.5 years later, here we are with The Sugar Detox.
There's so many wonderful stories that you share from your own practice and so many tips and even recipes, and we'll talk about some of those a little later. But I think what's interesting is the evolution of sugar in our diets because of society. Sugar used to be a rare commodity. Now, it's ubiquitous. How do you think society has encouraged the use and the excessive use of sugar?
I think it happens in a few ways. One, I think we're naturally predisposed to like sugar. When we were cavemen and women, knowing, and hunters and gatherers, knowing what was sweet was normally meant that it was safe to eat and therefore it wasn't poisonous. We no longer live in that world where sweetness needs to mean safety. And what's happened, especially throughout the 90s, when low fat became all the rage, when throughout, you know, all of the new food industry, when packaged foods became the rage, between those two things, the answer to things becoming low fat and the answer to things having longer shelf life was adding sugar. Sugar is a preservative. And when you take all the fat out of food, you often take a lot of the flavor and the stability of it out. And so what did people do? They added in sugar. So if you guys can remember, when all those Snackwell's cookies came out and all of these fat-free things, they had no fat, but they were increasing the amount of sugar, and we just started consuming more and more and more. On top of it, the whole refining process and the whole food industry of using white flour, white rice, all of these refined grains really just basically means that we're consuming more sugar with those as well, because it gets broken down into sugar right away.
It's interesting that you bring up Snackwells. I remember visiting a friend from college many years ago, and she had literally cases of Snackwells in her closet in her office. She had a pretty nice office, if I do say so myself. And I remember, I had never seen them before, and I looked at them, and I said, what are these? And she said, oh, these are fantastic. You've got to try them. I have them once a day. They're my treat. And I'm looking at the ingredients, and I said, there's nothing healthy about this. It has a green box. It has wording that would suggest that it's healthy, but there's nothing healthy about this product whatsoever. And as you pointed out, Brooke, the packaging and the industry itself has cleverly pushed all sorts of products on people, and people have just come to the point where they, for the most part, were not reading the labels and just kind of reaching for what they thought was supposed to be good for them. In the book, you talk about sugar and testing your sugar IQ, which I thought was brilliant. When people are out and about looking for something to drink, what advice do you have for them? And also when they're making purchases as far as different foods that they buy, whether it's for a snack purpose or something that they want to buy for their family, say for dessert or something, what advice do you have?
Well, listen, there's a few things there to answer. One, we're going to have sweets. It's going to happen eventually. And one thing I'm really proud of in the sugar detox is once you hit maintenance, we talk about how to indulge. There are going to be birthday parties. There's going to be a time to enjoy a nice ice cream cone, perhaps on a day like today. So there's a way to work that in. What the problem is that everyone's eating it too much, and treats are becoming common, and they're no longer special. When it comes to buying things in a store, when it comes to a drink that you need to purchase, the only thing you really should need is water. And if you're looking for more ingredients than that, you really just need water, and it can come from your tap if you have good water sources. You don't need to think much more than that. When it comes to other food products, I'd like people, instead of reading the nutrition label, which can be really tricky to decipher, it's really not clear, I want you to read the ingredients. I want you to see, is there any sort of added sugar in any kind of form? And the book gives you lots of different examples, whether it's brown rice syrup, whether it's molasses. You can see sugar in lots of different ways. Read the ingredients. If it has sugar in the ingredient label, it means that there's added sugar in the product you are buying. And that can be in a tomato sauce. That could be in a salad dressing. Those are not things that should need sugar.
Exactly. And thank you for pointing that out, because I think many people make that mistake and they just assume, well, it's in there. It's acceptable. In regards to sugar being classified as a drug, it's a very interesting subject, and sugar is often described as a very addictive ingredient. Can you talk about how people can recognize whether or not they are addicted to sugar?
Well, you know, when it comes to sugar being categorized as a drug, there's a few things that are going on with that are really interesting. First of all, there are scientists out in California who are trying to get sugar regulated the same way that tobacco and alcohol are. And a lot of their reasoning is because of the addictive nature of sugar. Other research studies have shown that withdrawal from sugar or cravings for sugar are equal to that of hardcore drugs like cocaine or heroin. And so, well, I don't think that anyone can be intoxicated from sugar, unless you actually watch my 4-year-old daughter at a birthday party. I don't think that, you know, you're not safe to drive or operate heavy machinery if you eat some chocolate or dessert. But I do think that we have these strong addictive cravings and withdrawal symptoms that make us want sugar more and more.
It's interesting when you talk to people about their daily routines, many people will say that they begin their day with a can of soda.
Oh, that's when they come into my office, that's the first thing that needs to go. And even if it's not a can of soda and they're doing their coffee, but they're throwing all of those pretty colored packets in, you know, thinking the artificial sweeteners is a better option, they're doing equally as much harm.
Speaking of artificial sweeteners, they can be found in everything from gum to energy drinks. How did the body process artificial sweeteners, and what are some of the issues that they cause?
There's a bunch of different issues. First of all, artificial sweeteners aren't healthy. In fact, there's been studies that a new animal study that just came out, and granted it is an animal study, not a human study, but this is always a great warning for us, of one of those pretty colored packets that's linked to leukemia in animals. That's scary. And this same particular product is also found to be derived from chlorine. So you're consuming chemicals, and these chemicals have been proven to have harmful effects on the body. On top of that, when we bombard ourselves with all the sweetness, and if you think about one packet, one of those pretty colored packets, how much real sugar you would need to equal the sweetness of those packets, you're bombarding your taste buds. Your taste buds no longer know what sweetness is. And so for us in the sugar detox, we do 3 days of going cold turkey to recalibrate your taste buds. We've been basically throwing hot sauce on our taste buds with all the sugar for so long that we no longer know what sweetness tastes like. And once you get through this detoxing program, when you're allowed to have that apple on day 4, you can taste the natural sugars. But with all of these artificial sweeteners that we're consuming, whether it's from sodas or you're adding it in or you're chewing gum, it really affects our palates and if we know what sweetness tastes like.
Thank you. One of the success stories that you write about is someone named Jesse who didn't necessarily have a weight issue but had an issue with fatigue. Can you share the story with our audience and also offer some advice as to how they can recognize if they are consuming too much sugar and are experiencing that same type of fatigue?
Absolutely. So you don't need to be overweight in order to have a sugar addiction. And in fact, it's really sneaky that very skinny people can be eating unhealthy. And while it may not show up in their waistline, it shows up in their overall health and especially just show up in their face and their skin. So people who may not have a weight issue and might be on the leaner side but eat a lot of sugar are going to look older, younger. So they're going to age prematurely. That's one thing there. Someone like Jesse, who, you know, from the outside had a great figure, didn't need to lose weight, but she was exhausted all the time. And she was caught up in the vicious cycle of sugar addiction, where you reach for something because you're tired, so you have that bagel in the morning, and it sounds great, it tastes great, you eat it, and then you crash shortly after it. So then what happens? You crash, you're going to reach for something else, whether it's a soda, whether it's a candy bar, whether it's another refined sugar product. Do you reach for it? You feel great for a little bit, and then you crash again. So Jessie was involved with this whole cycle of ups and downs, highs and lows with her blood sugar. And once we were able to stabilize her by taking her off of sugar for a few days, starting at baseline, and then reincorporating sugar in a modest way with natural sources that were safe, like fruit, like, you know, unflavored dairy, we were then able to keep her blood sugar stable throughout the day, and suddenly this fatigued girl had energy.
What you're describing reminds me of the slew of commercials that Snickers runs in which they have an actor who portrays someone that is just out of control, and the minute that they eat a candy bar, they come back to normal, which is the antithesis of what your book is about.
Absolutely. I happen to like the Aretha Franklin one. I think it's kind of funny. That said, basically what they're showing are the highs and lows of sugar. And so they're saying, you haven't eaten anything in a while. Grab a sugar bar. You're going to be all high and back to yourself. But they don't show what's going to happen 30 minutes later. And that's why these people are going to need to have Snickers bars every hour on the hour.
Exactly. And I think perhaps if somebody did a spoof on it, they might just show that very point. In regards to the aging issue, can you share with our audience exactly how does sugar cause you to age prematurely?
Absolutely. So my co-author, Dr. Farris, is a dermatologist. And what we discovered with sugar is that when people have too much sugar in their bloodstream, it first of all gets stored a lot as fat, and it tells the body to keep storing fat. But also all that sugar floating around in your bloodstream has got to go somewhere. It can't be stored because the stores are full. We're eating more than we need. And so those sugars start to attach to protein molecules. And when we think of protein molecules, the first things that come to mind are elastin and collagen. Now, those are things that people want injected into their skin. We want more collagen. We want more elastin. Those are the molecules in our skin that make us look younger. So when we have sugar binding to collagen and elastin, it makes those molecules brittle. It makes them sag, and that's when you start to see fine lines and wrinkles and dark circles and puffiness into your face, because all that collagen and elastin that we want beautiful and supple in our skin is rigid and bent and broken because sugar's attaching to it.
I'm surprised Hollywood hasn't bought every single copy of your book and followed the diet, because clearly you could save a lot of people a lot of money. And you actually talk about that in the book, how people are very quick to seek a solution that involves some sort of, whether it's augmentation or plastic surgery, what have you, and they could simply prevent the problem by the choices that they make.
I mean, look, I think that's our nation in general. Everyone wants a quick fix. They want the lap band. They want the bariatric surgery instead of, hey, let me stick to a diet that works. But that's the beauty of the sugar detox, in that it's a 31-day plan. 3 days are rough, but once you get over 3 days, you feel and look different immediately. So it gives you that positive reinforcement and that momentum to keep you going. And then you're motivated, because each week we slowly add back in more good foods that you're missing. So it's a really positive diet.
I completely agree. And I'd like to ask you, in regards to people who are following the diet, how can people deal with the 3 p.m. sweet craving, or even what I know a lot of people have problems with is the late at night food cravings?
You know, these are problems that I see in my practice all the time, and as well as, you know, a lot of people have. The great thing about the sugar detox is that we keep you so steady. We keep your blood sugar steady. You don't have any of those highs and lows like we talked about earlier, so there's no need to reach for that Snickers bar. By keeping your blood sugar stable and eating frequently, you're never going to get to the point where you're hungry and reach for something that you shouldn't be eating. So at 3 p.m., instead of going to the, you know, vending machine, you know it's snack time, and because you've read ahead, you know what you're supposed to have, you have a great healthy snack ready for you. And that's it. You really need to be prepared. One thing I do often in the evenings with my clients, for my clients who tend to be the late-night eaters, is we set a kitchen curfew. And so we say you have dinner, you've got an hour after dinner, and then kitchen is shut down. Think of it like a restaurant. No room service, no delivery, nothing. It's off. And sometimes something just being telling people things are off limits make it a little bit easier.
That's a really great suggestion. But what if you don't work in an office, and say if you're self-employed or if you're a stay-at-home mom and you're trying to follow the diet and that afternoon craving comes about, do you have any other suggestions?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, over our 80 testers, no one complained of hunger, which is a good sign, because if you're not hungry, you're not having true physiological signs of hunger, you're less likely to reach for something. When those cravings do hit, we ask you to do something else. Get up and go for a walk. Phone a friend. Use it as your helpline. Get online. Look on the computer. Watch a show. Read a book. Occupy yourself, or reward yourself with something that's not food-related. So I love sending my clients to go get a manicure. Go take a walk. Go take some pictures. Do something that will take your mind off the craving. If 20 minutes later that craving's not gone, then maybe you need an additional snack. But most likely it will be gone at that point.
I also used to have that late afternoon craving. I'd actually brush and floss my teeth, and I found that it didn't take too much time, but after you're done brushing your teeth, the last thing that you want to do is eat anything. Well,
absolutely, especially something sweet. It doesn't taste so good at that point.
Yeah. My next question is in regards to fiber. Can you talk about the importance of fiber and explain the difference between soluble and insoluble fiber and how much we actually need each day?
Okay, absolutely. So fiber is super important. It's important in general because it has a lot of health benefits. Fiber is what helps keep your heart and your colon healthy. Those are two major organs that we need working really well for to sustain a healthy life. So there's insoluble fiber, which means that it's not really digestible, and that's what sort of lines our digestive tract. That's what keeps everything flowing. That's what helps helps keep your bowels moving and prevents constipation. Soluble fiber can get broken up into the body, and that what I like to think of as little scrubbers. And that soluble fiber goes into your arteries, goes through your blood vessels, and cleans it and scrubs it and gets rid of the plaque. And that's why soluble fiber is so important to help prevent heart disease, because it'll help lower your cholesterol. On top of which, fiber slows down the absorption of sugar. So when you eat a piece of fruit that's high in fiber, like an apple, which is one of our favorite fruits on the sugar detox, the sugar in an apple is actually slowed down from being digested because there's fiber in there. So the fiber helps slow and regulate how quickly the sugar gets, you know, brought into the body versus something like table sugar or a piece of candy where there's no fiber, and that means it gets directly right into our blood sugar. That'll cause those spikes and lows that we talked about again earlier. And that's really what's so important about fiber.
Thank you. My next question is about carbohydrates. What types of carbohydrates do you think are good, and what are some of the carbohydrates that are commonly consumed that we really should avoid or rethink?
One thing that's important in what we do in both my practice, Be Nutritious, and in the sugar detox, is we define the difference between a carbohydrate and a starch. We don't say this is a low-carb diet, because carbohydrates are found in some vegetables, they're found in dairy, they're found in fruits. They're also found, of course, in all the grains that we eat, which is why we really talk about starches. Starches are those bready, pasta, rice kind of grain products. And we do limit the amount of those you're eating. Number one, they do break broken down right into sugar into the body. And when you do eat them, we want you having high fiber starches, good quality. So instead of white rice, we have you go for brown rice. We don't eat white bread. We go for multigrain bread. All that means that there's no refining process. That means that there's more fiber, there's more antioxidants, there's more vitamins and minerals. All of that helps slow down the absorption, and you have less of a sugar spike from it.
Thank you. One of the things in your book, The Sugar Detox, that I thought was really lovely was the fact that you brought up coconuts and avocados, which were vilified years ago. And it was so great to read positive things about each of them. Can you share with our audience some of the benefits of these foods and why they should not have been vilified but should actually be embraced?
I am the biggest fan of coconuts and avocado. I eat them on a regular basis. I cook with coconut oil. I literally want to smell like a coconut for the rest of my life. That said, during this whole fat-free craze, we were eating egg whites. We were eating tons of fruit. We were eating tons of grains, but white grains. And what happened? We got fatter and we got sicker. The problem is that we need fat in our diet. First of all, our cell membranes are surrounded by a layer of fat, and that's what keeps us looking young. When you see someone that follows a strictly low-fat diet, you'll see it in their skin. There's no glow. There's no rosiness. Their skin looks dehydrated in a way because of all the missing fat. Now, fat is similar to fiber in that by consuming fat, it slows down the absorption. So both fat and fiber take a long time to get broken down into the body. So when you're eating something that does have sugar, but yet you have a healthy fat source with it, again, it'll slow down the absorption of sugar into the body, which is great. Avocados are a great source of monounsaturated fats. All of that's been linked to a healthy heart and actually less belly fat, which who doesn't want a flatter stomach?
Exactly.
Coconuts, which have been vilified forever because technically they're a saturated fat, and even people in my own profession still say no to coconut oil, which is so ironic and silly because the fat that's in coconut oil, or coconuts in general, the fat that's there, doesn't get stored in the body as fat. It's a fat that we actually are able to use for energy. And there's a great study that happened where farmers tried using coconut oil to fatten up cows because fat cows mean more production of meat. So they start doing all this coconut oil and giving their cows all this extra coconut oil. And guess what? The cows didn't gain any weight. And then what did they go for? They went for the corn. They went for that quick sugar, the grains. That's what fattened the cows up, not coconut oil. So coconuts, great source of healthy fats. It gets used as energy in the body, and it's great to cook with because it has a higher smoking point than, say, olive oil. So when you cook with olive oil, it actually turns into a trans fat when it gets heated versus coconut oil, which is more stable.
Aloha. More people should really take a second look at coconut oil and the benefits of coconuts. There's so many different things that you can do with coconut. It's fantastic. And the flavor, especially in the summertime, if you want to just spruce up water, for example, just a little bit of coconut goes a long way. And even coconut oil, people expect that it's going to be this really heavy flavor, and it's not. It's actually quite pleasant. So, you know, thank you for including that in the book. I thought it was fantastic to finally read something that's actually giving people information about two foods that are wonderful.
Absolutely. And the great thing about coconut oil is it's great for your skin. So you can keep it in your kitchen, but also keep a jar in your bathroom. It's really great for your skin, for your hair, for your nails. I love coconut oil.
Me too. You also share a whole bunch of recipes, which I thought was fantastic. You give so much advice as far as how to eat out, what decisions you should make, as far as different choices, what you should avoid, so on and so forth. And you also share in your recipes a recipe with chia. Chia is not something that many people are familiar with other than the little chia pet commercials on the holidays. And I wanted to know if we could talk briefly about chia and the benefits.
Absolutely. I am the biggest fan of chia seeds. The only problem is that they do get stuck in my teeth when I eat them in the office. I always have floss nearby. That said, well, everyone knows chia from those old commercials of chia when they turned into these grassy little pets. Chia seeds are these great little power sources of healthy fats, of protein and fiber. And what's really fun with chia is that when you put them in water, they expand. So they go from these little poppy seed-looking things into these bigger molecules that almost look more like tapioca. And I love making chia pudding, and it's delicious. And all you do is you use chia, and we, in our recipe of chia pudding, we use lots of flavorings because we're pro-spices. While we're anti-sugar, we're pro-flavor and things tasting good. So using vanilla and cinnamon and ginger or cardamom, any of those to add wonderful flavors without adding any sugar, and your chia, and then you can add whatever milk or non-dairy product that you like to make that chia seed sort of expand. Now, with this pudding, you're consuming healthy fats, protein, fiber, all these omegas. It's amazing. And even more so, they continue to expand while you eat them. So they really keep you full for a long time. I think chia seeds are the new flax, I like to say. And they can be used in everything, covering your oatmeal, your yogurts, your cottage cheese. You can make smoothies with them. I'm obviously a huge fan.
I am also, and I think it's great that you shared so many different bits of information as far as options and food selections. There's really a lot in the book that will give people the choices that they need so that they can really eliminate all this excess sugar out of their system. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. Folks, thank you for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.